Hi, this is Bonnie Gillespie, and you're tuned in to The Work.
Thank you so much, Marcia Mason, for Yay! Joining me. So happy to have you here on The Work. Could you start us with a little backstory of your pre-self-management for actors journey and how we ended up intersecting?
Oh, wow. Okay, so I actually began performing when I was 8. It was one of those, I was taking dance lessons because that, you know, my mom took dance when she was a girl. So what do you do with your little girl? You put her into dance. And it was Marian McPherson School of Arts, School of Dance. And there was one summer, and I remember this very specifically. We were going into the summer, and on our desks, we were given a little flyer for French camp. And I had this very vivid image of playing volleyball and speaking French. So I took this little flyer home to my mom, and she had another flyer that was from the ballet school, and they had added theater arts. And theater was spelled T-H-E-A-T-R-E. And something clicked in my mind, and I went, ooh, that's kind of neat. So I wound up doing that, and it was just a lot of, you know, I was 8, so you do a lot of games and a lot of exercises, and improvised this show that we then put on for the parents. And I was like a blind beggar person with like a shiny cup for coins, and my line was alms for the poor, and I was doing it, but then I did it once and I got this huge laugh. And I went, oh my God, okay, this is what we're doing. And I've been performing ever since. So it went from me doing plays in elementary school. I did all the high school musicals. I went to the University of Windsor for musical theater because it was the only musical theater program at the time that had a degree, and everything else was a college and a diploma. And then in 95, when I graduated, I moved to Toronto, and you kind of half-assed it for a year because you're trying to figure out getting an apartment and getting a job and paying off your student debt and all this stuff. But back in high school, I had done a co-op at a theater company, so I was working backstage for an actual professional theater that was at St. Catharines, and one of our stage managers, Peter Shirk, worked at the Second City, and he didn't want to stay in St. Catharines, so he would drive down every day in the Second City van. So I got to Toronto, and then in 1997, over at Theatre Ontario, where you would go for all your audition notices, and one of them was for the Second City National Touring Company, and wouldn't you know, Peter's name was the contact. So I contacted him, I got an audition and a recall, and I didn't get in. And in 98, I got an audition and a recall, and they made me a swing for the touring company. And then from there, you know, I've been an understudy for them, so I've toured around with them. I was an original cast member in Tony and Tina's Wedding, which is also out of the Second City. I've done Summerstock, Theatre Orangeville, Theatre Collingwood, St. Lawrence Stage Company. Yeah, and you just keep building on it wherever you can with all those lovely hills where it's great and valleys where it's horrible. You just keep going on and on, and that's just keep doing it. Like, that's what I'm doing.
So then I know we met in person for the first time in, I want to say, 2011 when I toured to Toronto.
Yeah, it was I think it was the first time you came to Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we met through Kevin Hartley.
Yes.
Who is also an actor and just an all-around great guy. And Kevin, I had met Kevin because he was doing a workshop together with a former agent of mine, Glenn Hall, who works now at the Casting Workbook, which is like our breakdown services here in Canada. So the two of them wanted to find a way to help actors figure out the process, you know, what does your headshot say about you, which is your best side, what kind of vibe, like similar stuff to what you took and went like 1,000% more with. But Glenn and Kevin were doing the workshop. Glenn had invited me because I was kind of struggling at the time. And Glenn was like, well, come take my workshop. I do it with this other guy. And Kevin is the one that introduced me on MySpace.
MySpace, my goodness. I miss MySpace.
I do remember that because I friended you, and I think MySpace was sort of new at the time, and you said, hey, let's get that pretty girl some comments up there. Let's go. What's going on? So that was our first cyberspace meeting, and then when Self-Management for Actors started, when you came to Toronto, I wanted to hook up with that A-S to the A to the P.
Yeah. So talk to me about how that has had an effect on your journey going forward, because I know that, you know, you so get the ninja principles, obviously, not only the time that we worked together in Toronto, but ongoing, you get the whole targeting and I want you to speak a little bit, if you can, not that you are representative of all things Toronto, but the business has a little bit of a different feel in a market like Toronto, where relationship with agents and casting directors isn't as straightforward as it might be in a place like Los Angeles or New York or Chicago. Can you speak a little bit about how the Self-Management for Actors tools have been a part of your journey and how you've had to adapt them, possibly?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the biggest thing is that we just have a much smaller market. So when we approach these things, when you're really targeting these people, you have to really pay attention to what they like, what they don't like, and how, you know, for example, a casting director may like you to do things. Because we only have a very small number compared to how many there are in the US. So if for example, if you make a misstep and you're sending postcards out to casting directors, and one of them doesn't like it and strikes you off the list, it's probably not as big of a deal because you have, you know, seven more that you can go through and start building relationships with them. And then if that other casting director who had taken you off their list is on your target list, at some point you will make enough of a reputation that they will call you in anyway. I think that's a little more difficult here. It's a little more difficult to get into the room. But I also think, again, because everything is such a numbers game, and I think that, and I'm just such a nerd this way, I don't think many actors see it from that particular angle. Like they don't. Because why would you do the research if it doesn't occur to you to do it? If you don't know to ask the question, you know, why would you ask a question? I was doing research along targeting levels with casting directors and agents a little bit before I had met you. But then I made that conscious click in my head of, oh, yes, of course, this is why I'm doing it. So with casting directors, you know, I was going on IMDb and seeing what agencies were getting what people in the door and who was getting cast on what show. But it's always amazing to me when I sit down with another actor who, you know, may be a friend of mine, and I say it really is another game because TV moves so fast. And if a casting director has five roles that they have to fill on one particular episode, and they have time to see eight people each, they already know 15 people who could come in and fill that slot easily. So they're already going, I want to see Susan and Sharon and Marianne. Oh, and I told this other agent, Rob, I would see his guy because he let me see this person for this other role, which was smaller. Oh, and I saw this person in a play. So there may be only one actual audition spot for someone who hasn't been seen or someone who is newer. And all that's decided before the breakdown actually goes out. And then it depends on what agent you have and who you are with and what kind of relationship they have with that person as to whether you can get in that door or not. And they've never thought about it that way before. They've never targeted it that way before. It's usually, I need an agent. I'm going to send my stuff out to everyone. I'm going to talk to people and find out who their agent is and whether they like them or not. But, you know, I've known friends who have gone to a particular agency because they hear very good things about them. And then they say, well, I'm not getting sent out for anything.
To me, that's sort of like saying, I think I'd like to be married. How do you like your spouse?
Exactly. But again, I think that most people, when I went to university, and I loved my university, but it was so very centered on the art and the art and the art and the craft. So by the time that I got out, I was so well crafted, but I had no idea what to do with it. And again, luckily, I'm just a research kind of nerd. So I found Theatre Ontario. I found theatre books. I found reference library. And I was just kind of doing that stuff naturally. But maybe there might be a bit more of a push for the business side, which is more of what your philosophy and what you teach, to kind of blend the two together. There is this very romantic notion of the struggling poor artist, and it really doesn't have to be that way. It's just there needs to be some more thought put into things. And that's just a whole, like, where do you start that?
Sure.
And how do you start?
Marty, you're talking about representation, yeah. And I want to hit in on that a little bit, because you recently had a split from your longtime agent. Can you talk about that whole epiphany? And because I know it was a tough decision, and what?
It was a very tough decision. It was. I changed agencies 2 years ago, and my agent was great. I love my agent. I still love my agent. Like, she's, I knew her for a very long time. She was one of my producers at Second City. I knew her for when she was in the box office. She's great. And I would still recommend her to people. And it had absolutely nothing to do with why I wanted to leave. I was with my former agency for 10 years. That's a good long stretch, but you know, some people I know hop around agencies like every year or two, which I just can't do. And some people find their one agent and they stay there for 30 or 40 years. I've always considered myself, I'm a little different. I've always had this long felt feeling that I wasn't going to work as much until I got a little older, because I didn't see the ingenue category. I never went out for beer commercials or one liquor commercial I did go out for. I walked into a room full of models and I went, oh, I'm the funny. Okay, I get it. I know where I fit. I know where I fit in this. I've always been more of a character person. But my former agent has a great roster of all these super funny people. Improv people, sketch people, stand-up people, and she is really the go-to agent for comedy in this city. Like, if you want anything comedy related, like, she's it. Like, you want her, and she's the type of woman who will pick up the phone and call, like, on your behalf. Like, these are all great things. Over the years that I was there, everyone has those times where you go, I'm not getting in the room that I want to get into. And you have that conversation, I hope, with your agent when you say, what do you need from me? Like, do you want me to take headshots? Should I take a class? Do you need, like, what? How can I help you? Do you want me to recall my demo reel? Do you want to drop something off at a series place? Or whatever it is. Every once in a while, we would have a conversation. And sometimes there would be, you know, why don't you try this? Why don't you try this? I was taking classes. She recommended one particular person for a class, took it, and loved him too. Great. But still not getting particular rooms. And they're mostly drama CDs. And I do comedy all the way to the bank. But, you know, I have a very heavy theater background. I have a music theater background. And it doesn't preclude me from playing nurse number two or whatever it may be. And, you know, that part is frustrating. Because, again, like, how do you get in that room when there's barely one slot to be seen? And the answer near the end was generally, it takes time. We have to be patient. It takes time. And I get that. I totally get that. However, on the other hand, I was still thinking, I've been there for 10 years. So, like, is, because you don't want to do anything preemptively. And we had such a good relationship. I'm not just going to toss that away. So I took a long time to think about, well, what is it? We had a conversation one day, and there's one particular casting house that couldn't get into. And there's a show that I watch religiously that I absolutely just love on its own. And I know one of the directors, and I still can't get into the room, which is, you know, who knows what goes on there. And there was a role for an older woman. So not anyone in my category, but a role for an older woman on this drama. And my agent had submitted her. And this woman is a phenomenal actress. Like, she is incredible. But she also has a heavy background in comedy. She's very well known in the comedy community. And she didn't get an audition. And being the great agent that my agent is, got the phone and said, hey, like, you know, she'd be perfect for this part. And the casting director said, well, I guess I just didn't think it was very funny. And I went, oh, that's what it is.
It's the agent's brand.
That has to be. Yeah, like that. That was the conclusion that I came to. Not that she doesn't have a relationship at all with this casting director, but for someone like me who is still trying to get into the room, I went, what probably happens is I have this role for a nurse number two, and if I need it to be funny, I'll go here. And then they put that package aside, and they go to a different agency that they have a different relationship with, or an agency that is not specifically with my agent, who is comedy minded and has the best comedy roster.
You know, I love hearing that, because I'm actually tracking through thinking of when I've opened up submissions on a breakdown for anything I'm casting, mm-hmm. and I really do say, oh, if I only have 10 minutes, I'm going to hit my go-to agencies that do this thing the best. Like, if I need the most pretty people, I know exactly which agency to open first, because they have all the beautiful ones. And yes, there are beautiful people at the other agencies, but why would I sift through when I can just go to the one that's all they rep? And I wonder if actors really think about your agent's brand and what that may do in terms of impacting your ability to get into a room that you're targeting. How did you end up handling this with them? Because it sounds like you have a fantastic relationship even still, of being able to talk about the various issues that you're facing. I'm just curious what that process shaked out to be.
Well, it wasn't an easy process. And I was very upset, you know, because, you know, I've known her for so long, and she's been very good to me. And I hope that I had been very good to her. And no one wants to make that phone call of saying, it's just not like this, this is what's going on. I don't feel she's not very happy about it, obviously, but, you know, I had said, it's a matter of different agents have different relationships with different casting directors. And, I had always kind of thought, you know, maybe I would try somewhere else at some point. And this kind of just set it for me. I was very lucky with the fact that, I mean, we have contracts with our agents. So I was like, I'm prepared to wait like the 2 months to fulfill my contract, make as much money off me as you want to, if you can. And she said, no, you know what? We'll just finish this now, because if you don't want to be here, then you don't want to be here, and we'll just finish that and we'll be done. And I was like, okay, you know, it's however you want to do it. And like, I've had other old jobs come up that I've looked through her that she's renegotiated for me. But you know, it is a different relationship. you know, not friends, but friendly, you know, with your agent. And that to me is always, and also being a people person, you know, you always want people to like you all the time. So it was a very difficult conversation. It was very disappointing for me to realize that I was going to have to go somewhere else. And it was very upsetting to me to have to sever that relationship. But looking in the long term, in the long run, my main thought was still, I truly believe I need to be somewhere else. And it doesn't mean that she doesn't have a relationship with that casting director, because I know that people on her roster do get on that particular show and do go in to see that particular casting director. But, you know, for newer people, and I will say I've been with my new agency for 2 years, and I've seen a number of casting directors who hadn't seen me before, including one.
So that then really takes it into the importance of doing your research, which I know you are a research junkie enough that you were able to map out what kind of team you needed to assemble to get you into the rooms more consistently than, because even if your former agent can get someone in on those shows and in that casting office, that's different than someone that, like, obviously they're the go-to agency for that casting office.
And especially when the numbers are so low of how many people get into that room to begin with.
Yeah.
It's a numbers thing.
So is management a thing in Toronto yet? Because I know we talked about this when I was there a few years ago, and how you know, management is this animal that came up in Los Angeles to try and combat the power agents that are repping thousands of clients, and people were feeling like they didn't get any sort of personal attention. And so the personal manager was born decades ago in LA, and of course in New York that's now taking off, and in Chicago as well. And I remember when I went to Toronto and met you in person for the first time, we talked about how management's not yet a thing. How in the 5 years since I visited you there, has management evolved, if at all?
With my personal experience, I would still say management isn't really a thing. Again, and I think that's a numbers thing. We don't have the same population. We do have agencies here that do take on certain aspects of management roles, but there's no separate agency. There's no, I have a manager, I don't have an agent, I have a manager and an agent. Unless there are people going back and forth from LA, and then they have an agent here, an agent there, a manager here, and all that stuff. But for the most part, I'd say not really.
Gotcha. Cool. Yeah. Just always curious to see how things are shifting in the timeline that it takes with all that. Tell me what you're most excited about that's coming up for you. I know most recently you and I collaborated in, I had you write a scene for our Cricket Feet Showcase, which was amazing.
Yay!
Thanks so much for your brilliant words. Actors did you proud, I promise. But it was
Thank you. Lots of laughs.
Yeah.
So,
good.
And that this is on the writing side. That that sketch that I wrote, and we call them sketches because we think that kind of writing is in the vein of a special that I wrote for with Nicholas Lemon. And he has a TV show. It's a one-off turnkey special. It's called Some TV. That's been airing here on the Rogers Network in Canada. And we just made an announcement because we are going to have our big American premiere. And I'm going to show up a little card here, but I'll read it out anyway, just so that people can see it. It's called Some TV. And on June 4th at 8 p.m., we are premiering on the Emmy-nominated Brick Network, which is out of Brooklyn, and it also will be airing across New York City.
Congratulations.
So that's our writing special. We're super happy about that. Our hashtag is hashtag SOMETV, so capital S-O-M-E, capital T, capital V. And you can follow me on Twitter, which is at Mowsh, M-O-W-S-H. I'm also on Instagram, at Mowsh13, M-O-W-S-H-1-3. And then I'm also going to be in a Fringe show I wasn't planning on being in a French show this year, but I had a gentleman contact me who saw me in my Second City Conservatory show, going on 5 years ago, I think. And they got a last minute slot because someone had dropped out. So he was looking for people that he thought he might like to work with. So he contacted some people. And that's called Behold the Barfly. And it's kind of like a surreal sketch comedy review, but this particular company tends to do things that are a little darker and a little more surreal. So the Fringe Festival is June 29th to July the 7th. Because we are site specific at the Monarch Tavern, that's 7 p.m. every night, as opposed to the shifting around time slots. Other stuff that you're trying to get going. I have two different web series that I'm in production and writing with and figuring things out. And I was just in a voice committee meeting with ACTRA the other day talking about audiobooks and that kind of market that is now making its way up north. Apparently, it's a very big market in the South. But we're just on the cusp of doing that there. So there's lots going on, and I'm very happy for the sunshine, I will say.
So, Mash, tell me, I'm listening to you list off all the awesome things that are going on, and I'm hearing writing this and then acting this and writing this and acting this. How do you stay balanced, when you are a content creator as well as a performer, an auditioner? I mean, how do you manage all of those pots on the stove, as it were?
I keep lists. I have lists all over my house. I have small lists of things that are to be done today. I have long running lists of things that need to be done in the month. I actually have a big binder that is all full of my self-management for actor stuff that is separating you, like today more immediate stuff, short term, medium term, long term, and then it's really, some of it when you're doing so much is really, oh shoot, I forgot to do this, and it's putting out some fires, but I try to touch on things at least once a week, and again these things rotate too. So my one web series partner went out of town to the Star Trek exhibit up in Ottawa. So, you know, I'm not going to have those days where I'm working on that one. So I'm working on something else. And part of it too, I think just on the human side, is just trying to keep that insight of, because I also have anxiety too. So of just being aware and going, oh, okay, I'm getting really anxious now. I need to take a break, or I need to go for a walk, or you know what? I know I have this big long list today, but I need to put that aside and just, you know, focus on anything that has nothing to do with whatever it is that I'm working on, because I have to refill my own well. Because if I don't do that, I'm not going to have anything.
You want to do a little brand improv? So you're invited onto Inside the Actor's Studio, and you've been given the opportunity to take over the class, that last moment where these are your students. What is the one question you hope someone asks you, so that when you have the opportunity to be of service to this community, you are prompted in the right direction?
I would hope someone would ask me, what is
What's the worst thing about being an actor?
I really do think that no matter what happens, whether your career is going great or whether it's going really shitty, the worst thing that can happen for you as an actor is when you lose sight of all possibility. Because those are the moments when you feel like you're beating your head against the wall and nothing is ever going to happen again. Because we are in an industry where the amount of effort we put into something does not equal reward. And you have to make your own definition of what reward means to you. Because normally out in the world, you put in effort, you get a reward. You want to cook dinner, you go out, you buy your stuff, you cook it, you eat. If you're an accountant, you do people's taxes, you get someone's tax returns, you do it, you give it to them, they give you money. It is not that way in our industry at all. We can put in effort after effort after effort after effort after effort, and still get no money, no contract, no run anywhere, you know, something we stick in a drawer somewhere. And when we lose all that sense of possibility, that's when you start going, well, what's the point? Why would I keep putting in this effort when what effort has taught me is I get nothing in return? So that is the worst part of being an actor or an artist. And if you are aware of that, if you know that that is there, then you can take it easy on yourself. You can give that break. Don't, you know, because you're not going to find your motivation in that part. You're not going to find your inspiration in that part. You just have to give yourself a break, cut yourself some slack. And then at some point, you will reset yourself because you're an actor. You're going to get itchy. You're going to want to do stuff. Okay. And I really do think that is the worst.
I love it. That's a fantastic, spectacular answer. What? Tell me what your the designer that dresses you. What is your on brand look when you do get that red carpet moment? Who are you wearing?
Oh wow! Oh, wow. Oh, you know what? I don't think I have one particular designer. I tend to really like the kind of 60s vintage sort of look, that nice little, you know, top that goes down and then flares out at the bottom. That's really, I'm super comfy. Like that's my thing. I can't remember the last time I bought a pair of heels.
That's great. And so you're on that red carpet at the first big golden shiny, at the very top tier, the first one that you're like, oh, this is, wow, I'm never going to forget this moment. Who's on your arm?
Yeah.
Who's your guest?
Yay. Nicholas. Nicholas is my sweetheart. And he is a puppeteer and director. And he's the creative force behind some TV that we're premiering. And yes, and he is looking very smashing.
So he has done the stylist thing as well. Yes.
Oh, yes. I think I keep threatening one day that I'm going to have him a suit made. A nice bespoke suit, and we'll pick out some fun fabric and
I love it. Oh, Mash, fantastic. Let me see if anybody's got questions here in the live interactive version that we're doing here. Jonathan says, that sounds like so much fun. Anybody want to pop in and ask a quick question? We'll hold for a couple secs in case somebody would like to do that. And I'll meanwhile ask one more brand prop question. Oh, this is one I love. What is your soundtrack, the music that's playing as you walk along in your life?
Music theater. Anything musical theater wise, or it's like 60s stuff. So the Monkees.
Oh, let's combine those.
Ah,
I would so go see that show. Nice. Yes.
Let's throw in a little Buddy Holly, a little rockabilly in there.
I love that for you, Mash. Oh my God, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I don't know the popular music.
So. And the fact that you call it the popular music. No.
I'm just not cool that way. And I walk in my own coolness and I'm
perfectly on brand. I love it. Marcia, thank you so much for sharing this time with me. You are absolutely wonderful. Yay. And I'm so glad that we got to do this.
Oh, thank you for having me, Miss B. Nice
absolutely.
To see you.
All right, beautiful people, that's it for this episode of The Work. We will have this up on iTunes soon and, of course, on YouTube. And again, huge thanks, Mash. Really, really do appreciate it. And congrats on all the cool stuff going on.
Thank you, and thank you for
having
me. I'm
excited to go to, okay, hashtag SumTV is where we're going to like catch most of that good stuff. All right.
All right, my friends, this has been Bonnie Gillespie for another episode of The Work. Thank you so much for joining me here. Please join me over at BonnieGillespie.com for all sorts of goodness between episodes. And until next time, stay ninja.